had to leave for for my leave of absence.
So you were following what was going on there, or, and
it was difficult not to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very close to many of the people there.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the company I just started here in California about August a year and a half ago, is with two Applied Biosystems veterans of the very early days.
Who is that?
Well, that electrical engineer called George Golda, and a software engineer called Mark Marriott, and another engineer who happens to be the son of another engineer who helped start Applied Biosystems. So I've maintained good contacts with all the people I've worked with. Anyway, so I came back as a consultant, and that was about the time when the board of Applied had decided to sell the company to,
Perkinelmer.
Perkinelmer, yeah.
So what did you, you knew that was in the works when you...
Well, I knew it was being discussed. I didn't, I didn't know the details or anything like that.
What was your feeling about it? Did you think that was the right thing to do, a good deal to make, good for the company, or?
It was neither here nor there, but that's what the board thought was the best thing to do. Andre was not against it, so that was...
Who was leading the board at that time?
I have no idea. I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think the leadership of the board of Applied Biosystems has always been the CEO. There was no board member who was really.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you were leading the board when you were directing traffic.
Well, it wasn't a question of leading. I mean, I spent a lot of time off board meetings with individual board members to keep them up to date. I mean, some board members I saw once or a couple of times a week, some I saw a couple of times a month in between board meetings.
Yeah.
Well, on the phone every now and then, if something came up and I thought that this person might be able to offer good advice.
Yeah, I don't know if we covered it the first time, but who was really active? Or who did you rely on a lot for help? And on the board?
I spent most of my time keeping the board away from the company.
Yeah. Okay. No, yeah, I remember you did mention that. Yeah.
Okay, that's... Mm-hmm. I acted as a buffer between the board and the company. And I didn't... board members were not allowed. I don't want to say allowed.
Sure.
It never came up. I never had to veto anything, and I never had that. Board members never came and walked around.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they interacted with the company, it was through me.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way you wanted to have it.
That's the way it evolved.
Yeah, okay. and it worked.
They were comfortable. I was comfortable. So it worked. There's no way. The way I view the board's role, that may not be true in all situations, but in the kind of situation we have, where we were starting afresh, primarily with people that I had selected. Every employee in the company was an employee I had selected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I knew the employee better than any board member would know them, because I had selected them.
Right.
They are people I had worked with before, had interviewed extensively, and felt comfortable with. Okay. So, and the board knew that, and they recognized that they were always, they never had any surprises. They never found out something that I hadn't told them about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, in that context, they never had to act as a board. There was never a vote taken where one board member disagreed and others agreed, or I forced an issue or anything like that. It was all pretty much open, and formally the board would approve because it had to act as a board and approve things. But the approval came as a result of mutual personal interactions that all converged.
Yeah. And the fact that all projects were successful, I don't know all, but the important projects were successful and, you know, the company is making progress, that made it easy to maintain.
Well, there were, from the creation of the company, I should have somewhere, I think it's one sheet of paper that outlined what the company was going to do before it's any of the board members put any money in, mm-hmm. in financing initially. I mean, we had the seed money. Mm-hmm. And it had on it, it listed four instruments. And these four instruments went to market.
Mm-hmm. So, on schedule, yeah.
Some ahead of schedule. I mean, mm-hmm. that was, yeah.
Yeah. So the board, the composition of the board is pretty much the same, and Andre thinks it's a good idea to
I really do not know how Andre interacted with the board. You'd have to ask him. Because when I left, I had serious health problems, and I was away, out of contact with the everyday activities for, I don't remember how long, but for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
Until I felt better, and I was in talk with Andre, he said, well, you know, we're about to do this merger with a sale to Perkin Elmer, and if you want to come and help with, and I can't remember exactly the context of why, but at the time it was basically that there was a group within Applied Biosystems that Perkin Elmer had no interest in. And the idea, well, why not spin that group off as a separate company?
Mm-hmm.
And
so you went back expressly for that purpose to work on that?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't honestly say whether it was a component. I don't think it was.
Yeah.
I went back because I was interested in that particular aspect, and that particular aspect was at the time was a strong interest everywhere in antisense, and the
who was working on
it? Well, Gilead started to do that.
Yeah, Gilead did. I mean, at Applied Biosystems.
Well, Applied Biosystems started doing that before Gilead, or about the same time, I don't know. Just, mm-hmm. But there was a group at Applied Biosystems that had developed. Remember, the first DNA synthesizer that was successful was Applied Biosystems.
Yeah.
So you
had the chemistry expertise.
Yeah, had the chemistry expertise. And the people who ran that group had a vision that perhaps that expertise could be used to make large quantities of synthetic DNA mm-hmm. that might be used as antisense drugs. Mm-hmm. We were not, Applied Biosystems wasn't in the business of trying to develop drugs. All it was shooting for was enabling large quantity of synthetic DNA to be made.
Yeah.
And so that was an expertise that Perkin Elmer was not interested in.
Yeah. But they were interested in Perkin Elmer. My understanding, and I forget who put it to me, but the idea for the merger, a big part of the merger was to get access to PCR. Is that your recollection?
Well, PCR was an important component of the IP of Applied Biosystems.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they're related, right? They're working with the DNA chemistry and PCR. I mean, the same group would have the interest in.
Not necessarily.
No?
I mean, to manufacture synthetic DNA does not use PCR.
But it, yeah.
The use of PCR is for diagnostic applications.
Mm-hmm.
Or sequencing.
Mm-hmm. So, this group wanted to develop antisense drugs, wanted to become a...
No, they wanted to manufacture large-scale quantities of DNA, of synthetic DNA molecules that could be used as antisense. So if antisense was successful, I think that the motivation of the individual behind it was to provide the quantities to anybody who would want to make it.
To be a supplier to that.
To be a supplier.
Business, yeah.
Applied Biosystems had no ambition to be other than a supplier of tools, and this was one tool.
Mm-hmm. And who was the main person there in that group?
There were two people. One person who had joined us just a few short time before I left. I can't remember how long it was. Mm-hmm. His name was Gerald Zon, Z-O-N. Mm-hmm. And the other one was who had, in fact, led the DNA synthesizer biochemistry work at Applied Biosystems, and that was Tim Geiser. Mm-hmm. So Jerry and Tim were working on this large-scale production, and they had plans on how to make it and so on.
Yeah.
So...
And PerkinElmer had no interest in what they were doing?
I never had any direct interaction with PerkinElmer, so yeah, I cannot... You're going to have to ask somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
The way I saw it at the time was this way. If in fact PerkinElmer had no interest in that large-scale synthesis of DNA, why give it to them? The price that they were going to pay for Applied Biosystems would be the same whether that was in it or not.
Okay? Yeah.
And I reasoned, that's again from my perspective, I didn't have any direct communication with the board or anything
right.
like that, but
you know,
is that if Applied Biosystems would spin off that thing, mm-hmm. that technology, together with X millions of dollars, I can't remember how much it was,
mm-hmm.
The price of the merger with PerkinElmer would not be affected anyway.
Right. Were there any other pieces of the company that were identified in the same way as maybe not essential to the merger? So?
That was the one.
Yeah. Okay.
So we spun off a company called Lynx Therapeutics.
So that's how Lynx started, as
that's how Lynx started. However, I wasn't comfortable. For lack of availability of anybody else to lead it, they asked me if I would. But fine.
Mm-hmm.
So we formed Lynx Therapeutics,
mm-hmm.
but not having any pharmaceutical experience or any first-hand knowledge of what the antisense technology was going to do or where would it stand and how would it be financed and so on,
mm-hmm.
I said to myself, well, I'm going to need some help to make that happen. And the help that I sought and was able to get in the form of two directors of Lynx, one was Sidney Brenner, and the other one was Bill Rutter.
I didn't realize that Bill Rutter was involved.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about each. Had you known Sidney Brenner before?
Sidney Brenner, I met before Applied Biosystems was financed, because I was sent to the Rothschild Group in London,
mm-hmm.
to seek money for the first round of financing for Applied Biosystems.
Yeah.
So they said, well, Lord Rothschild is not here today to see you, but in any event, he really doesn't do anything in biotechnology unless Sidney Brenner tells him it's okay. So why don't you go and see Sidney Brenner first, and then you may come back and shake Lord Rothschild's hand if Sidney Brenner agrees. So I went, took the train and went to Cambridge and met Sydney for the first time. And I had no idea who he was. Okay.
Yeah.
I met him, explained to him what I thought could be done. And at that time, it was just the first product of a plant bio system was the protein sequencer. Mm-hmm. And explained to him how I thought that the very corrosive chemistry could be automated if one designed the valves properly, and so forth. He nodded two or three times, and he must have given the green light to the Rothschild group, who indicated then they would be a co-lead in the round.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because that, Sydney became a quarterly or bi-yearly, I don't remember, but
yeah,
quarterly visitor to Applied Biosystems.
Uh-huh.
To report to Rothschild. By the way, I never got to shake Lord Rothschild's hand.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, and so...
So he would report on technical progress.
I don't know what he reported on.
Yeah.
Okay. He came, he visited.
Yeah.
He saw, he didn't concur, but he reported. Okay.
But he came, and when he's talking to you, he's asking technical questions, not necessarily business questions, or...
Well... There is no such thing as business questions.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's basically questions as to which kind of scientist would like what features and what features one should worry about.
Commercial questions, yeah.
Yeah. And they're not commercial in the sense that is it worth paying that much for it or not paying that. These questions never arose.
Yeah.
The question is it worthwhile to do?
Right.
From a scientific perspective. And that's the kind of advice he, uh-huh, he provided.
Yeah. And Jim Blair was he?
Well, he was the contact with Rothschild. He,
yeah,
used to work for Rothschild.
And he was on the board. Was Blair on the,
yeah,
board? Yeah. Okay.
Blair was on the board because he represented the Rothschild investment at Applied Biosystems.
Yeah.
But you know, so it was indirectly through Blair that I eventually met Sidin Brenner. And,
yeah.
Shall I make you another coffee?
I'm fine, thanks.
Okay. So, that's how Lynx got started. Some interests. I do not recall if Chiron put in some money. I think they put in some, but I can't remember.
Well, had you known Bill Rutter before?
I got to know Bill Rutter in the course of building up Applied Biosystems, because we used to meet at the biotechnology gatherings in the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
Both Ed Penhote and Bill Rutter would be there. Ed Penhote was usually the speaker. Bill Rutter was always in the audience. Mm-hmm. I got to meet Bill. And Bill is very, you know him, I mean, he's a fantastic guy. He keeps to the background, but he really, he has built up a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got to know him. And so when the issue of Lynx came up, I went to see him. I said, I'd like your advice. Do you think this is worth it? And he looked at some of the DNA synthesis stuff that we were able to do on a larger scale. He was somewhat interested in antisense at the time. It probably was worth a gamble for him to be present if it worked and not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the synthesis techniques, this was innovative at the time. Nobody else was doing it.
There are a lot of people doing DNA synthesis.
Yeah.
I don't think that the quantity at which we could do it at the time had yet been matched by anybody.
Yeah. What enabled you to do it?
You'll have to ask Jerry or Tim. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I think Tim would probably would love to talk about it. He's very proud of what he did then and is feeling very sorry that it didn't get applied, but
uh-huh,
that's another story.
Yeah. And they were happy to have, Jerry and Tim were happy to have Sidney Brenner and Bill Rutter involved as...
Surely, a project they were working on that had the names of Bill Rutter and Sidney Brenner associated with it was a positive. I don't think anything beyond that. Bill Rutter never discussed science and technology with him, mm-hmm. and neither did Sidney Brenner.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So is that the extent of their roles and their kind of an advisory board symbolic presence?
They were basically, from my perspective, the reassurance that I wasn't overlooking something silly. Okay?
Yeah.
So, to the extent that I kept them up to date as to what we were doing, if they didn't respond, we can continue.
Yeah. Okay.
And they never stepped in and said, you're doing something crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Okay, so how did it progress? You got started. The idea was, I guess, everybody's here in the Bay Area, so you want the ideas should be here.
What idea?
To have the company here in the Bay Area.
Well, it was in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
We
naturally.
We rented space across the bay in Hayward, and got started.
Yeah.
And then we tried, and I don't remember how it came about. Jerry used to be at the NIH before he joined us. And he had some contacts who helped. I may be saying some wrong things here. You have to talk to Jerry to clarify.
Okay, sure.
But I think it was through Jerry's contact that we got into a clinical trial of efficacy of the antisense approach in a particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry managed to get a series of clinical trials ongoing in Argentina with the idea that we would
supply the DNA.
We would supply the antisense compound for a particular target, which some of Jerry's contacts had shown in vitro that they were active against certain genes implicated in restenosis.
Uh-huh.
So, we did a trial in Argentina, and nothing came of it. And by that time, Lynx needed more money, and Sidney had invented a new way of doing sequencing. So,
which was also dependent on synthesis.
No.
Okay.
Nothing to do with synthesis.
Okay.
Sidney had invented a new way of... That was the origin of massively parallel sequencing.
Mm-hmm.
All the new gen sequencing right now is just amplifying what Sidney had invented at Lynx. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Sidney had invented this thing. And at the time, I had to make a very difficult decision. Couldn't raise money for the antisense because the clinical trial did not provide enough substance.
Right, and the dates are, this is early 90s at this point, 91, 92?
I think the clinical trials were later than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lynx got started in the early 90s, but...
Okay.
But getting to the clinical trial was a few years later.
Right, so at the same time, companies like Gilead that had started antisense, they hadn't gotten anywhere in the clinic either. So
they claimed at the time there was big claims, like we had. I mean, But eventually it didn't turn out.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And I'm cautious by nature, and when I began to think that there was nothing really to hang your hat on there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, let's switch it.
And that was disappointing for Tim.
Well, of course, it was disappointing for Tim and Jerry.
Jerry.
Probably Tim took it much more personally than Jerry, but that's I think so.
Yeah.
And So we meaning the Board of Links, decided to put more resources on demonstrating the large-scale sequencing that Sydney proposed.
Yeah, and how did you envision, did you have a sense that this could be revolutionary? I mean, you knew the sequencing business inside and out, right? You basically invented that, so.
No, I didn't invent anything.
Well, no, the Applied Biosystems did.
Yeah, fine, but. We demonstrated that it was possible to sequence 500,000 templates simultaneously.
Yeah. Okay.
And we got a contract from DuPont Agricultural Labs to do that for them commercially, and we did. However, there was a key element in getting that technology to work that really could not be commercialized. It was very difficult. It was based on mounting those templates that you wanted to sequence on as many beads. And the process of mounting the templates on the beads required some culling of the properly laden beads from the ones that were not properly laden.
Uh-huh.
Which means that we had to use...
Is it a chemical process you're talking about?
They're chemical processes, yes.
Yeah.
Biochemical processes.
Yeah.
That we had to use a very expensive self-sorting equipment to pull out the beads that had properly acquired templates from the beads that hadn't. And that, we learned how to do it, we could do it, but we couldn't expect a customer of ours to do it.
I see, yeah.
So, while this was going on, because of Sydney and his acquaintances, I got approached from one of those acquaintances who was involved in a company in Cambridge called Solexa. And that person invited me to join the board of Solexa to help them because they had a very sensitive way of identifying DNA fragments that had been appropriately fluorescently tagged. But there were some problems with the use of the chemistry that needed attention. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me to join the board and did it. Now,
and who was it that you spoke with initially?
I think he was the grandson of Lord Rothschild.
Okay.
And Tom Daniel was his name.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so Tom asked me to join the board of Solexa. I agreed to join the board of Solexa. There was no conflict between what he did and what they did. And very quickly, I realized, as you know, the easily better, I'm going to put it away.
Oh, sure.
Starting
it's
to
melt. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Would you like some more juice?
I'm fine, thanks.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
Here we go. So very quickly I realized, as did also the other people that Solexa was working with, that there was a particular chemistry that had been spun off from Serono in Switzerland that could, depending on how it was applied, either solve Applied Biosystems' quandary of dealing with this multitude of beads, or solve the other quandary.
You mean Lynx's quandary?
Hmm?
You mean Lynx's
quandary? Lynx's quandary with the beads, yeah. Or solve Solexa's quandary with some of the inefficiencies of its chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And so, with the...
And do you know the origins of that technology at Sirona? What were they working
on? I know the origin. I know exactly what the technology is, but it's irrelevant to this discussion.
Okay.
Right now. So, I encouraged both... I was a director of Applied, of Lynx.
Yeah.
And I was a director of Solexa. So, I made it clear to my colleagues on both sides that there was this technology that could help this quandary or help that quandary.
Right.
And therefore, would you please talk to these people and see if you can license it, because it's available for licensing.
Uh-huh. That could have turned into a competitive situation.
No.
No?
No. It could not. It needed either one or the other.
Okay.
And it didn't... No, it needed both in order for something to really happen with it.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And so, what was at the back of my mind was complementarity of the Solexa technology and the Lynx technology, both facilitated by this other thing, would really create something big. So, I encouraged both companies to try and do a deal with that one. They both did, and in the process of doing it, realized that they better... That's how Lynx and Solexa got together with that technology.
Yeah.
And that's how the Illumina sequencing was born.
Right, yeah, so you saw everybody involved came to see that this is the way to commercialize massively parallel. Yeah.
They needed both things.
Right. Yeah.
So Alexa didn't have the instrumentation expertise that Lynx had. Lynx's instrumentation expertise was very good on 500,000 templates at the time, and a few million soon.
Yeah.
But that bead issue was had to be gotten out of the way.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, at this time, I mean, you're working, this is going on mid-90s, I suppose, and you're very close with a lot of people from Applied Biosystems. You maintain those relationships, but now you're competing with them. Yeah.
I'm not competing with them.
Well, they're...
No? Applied Biosystems was a shareholder of Lynx.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay. That's right. Yeah.
They spun off Lynx and they kept a number of shares, and they also had options on many more, which they never exercised.
Yeah. What about competition in terms of the technology?
The technology was disclosed to Mike Ancapillar, who decided it wasn't good enough for me.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Everything was done above board. Everybody knew what we had, and everybody knew that I was a director of this one. Everybody knew it was okay.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it that way.
Yeah. Well, did you say to him, Mike, this is really good?
I don't say anything to anybody. I just say, this is what we have.
Yeah.
Okay. We think it's going to work. Are you interested?
Yeah.
Okay. And not just Mike. I mean, there were several others.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, when you presented it to them, presumably you're presenting it as something that, you know, you think it's worthy of their consideration, something that they might want to...
They want to buy. Make me an offer.
Yeah. Okay. But they did, yeah.
Make me an offer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you put the two together?
I didn't put the two together. The boards agreed to put them together, but that agreement came as a result of both companies independently talking to that third one.
Yeah.
I was out of it by then. I didn't want... Okay. I made no money out of this, by the way.
Really?
No.
Yeah?
I just brought them together, and I went on to do something else.
Yeah, okay. So that way, and it, you decided at that point that you said, Sydney, see ya, I'm going to go do something else. And he was still with
No. That's... The something else is the company that we have in Cambridge now, mm-hmm. called Population Genetics.
Oh, this is with Sydney too?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. We just decided to go beyond what bringing those two together would do. And,
Well, how did that come about? When did you see this? When did this start to take shape?
I can't remember the dates.
Yeah.
It began to take shape after, mm-hmm. after. Look, the dynamics of groups of scientists working together very often, if they deviate from the vision of anyone in the group, if that dynamic engages the majority of either group and you're not comfortable with it, the best thing to do is to let it go their way, because...
Sure.
Okay.
Was there something that you weren't comfortable with?
Answer you indirectly.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier that at Applied Biosystems, my primary role in terms of dealing with the board was to make sure that they did not interfere with the functioning of the company.
Yeah.
Okay. And if I'm going to be responsible for something, I don't want a majority vote of people removed from the heart of to decide what is correct or what's right or wrong. They may be right, they may be wrong, but I have no control. So why should I put myself in the middle?
Uh-huh, yeah. So. Right, I understand. But you saw that the potential for this, that, I mean, what...
Well, of course, otherwise...
Illumina has made out of it, yeah.
Well, of course.
Uh-huh. But was it a technical, or did it have anything to do with the technical direction? What to do with the technology? Or?
Well, obviously it was. Uh-huh. It was the bringing together of two technologies that needed that third one for them, for both.
Right. No,
for
right. Board, but yeah. Then to use it and to develop it. And
look, there is no question that the sequencing of the human genome was not the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
A lot of people said, well, now the sequence of the human genome is sequenced, now we know everything. Okay? Bullshit. So, there was going to be much more sequencing, and there will still be much more sequencing. Now sequencing has become a commodity because of some of this. And, in fact, one of the big problems of sequencing today is not the actual sequencing, it's the sample preparation for sequencing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where the cost is, and that's why we developed that manual robot in order to facilitate.
Okay, designed specifically for that. Okay,
not specifically, but it was one of the drivers.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of the drivers.
Uh huh. Good. So you saw this developing, and I'm just trying to, you know, you don't have to answer if you don't, but you didn't like the direction they were going to take.
It isn't, I didn't like it. It wasn't something.
Or it was your role. That you
know, it was not that either. The reason I'm hesitating and be careful is because I don't want for anything I say might be taken out of the context to mean something I don't mean. Okay?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
And that's fine. And of course, I just want to remind you that we don't do it. We won't do anything with any of this information without your permission.
No, fair enough. But I'm trying to explain it. I want to explain it to you. the main reason for the success of applied biosystems. It has nothing to do with any managerial quality that I might have or any intellectual or technological input that I might have provided. I'm a physicist by training. I did not know that people even sequenced proteins or DNA when I started with the company.
Okay.
All I knew was an instrument was needed to automate certain chemistries, that some bright people had developed the bright chemistries, some others had made attempts at automating that chemistry and had told me why they felt they had failed. Okay. And I attacked those problems from a mechanical, physical perspective. But at the same time, I don't think the company would have succeeded at all if it weren't for the fact that I picked people whom I knew were going to work well together.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is the cultural differences between Cambridge and the Silicon Valley and that other technology coming out of Switzerland at Serono. To my mind, we're going to be a hell of an obstacle I didn't want to bother with.
I see. Okay? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Some of those people were not people I would have picked up to work with, not because of any particular...
Maybe they're fine, but if you put them together, it's not going to work.
Or maybe they don't...
Yes.
The way they look at things isn't the way I do.
I get it, yeah.
How am I going to be comfortable telling them or advising them to do this or that?
Okay. Good, yeah.
That's basically it.
Okay. Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So you decide, okay, I'm not going to go with that for... That's great idea, good luck.
Yeah, I'll move on to something else. At the time, I had already started a couple of... gotten involved with another company.
Not Population Genetics.
No. Yeah. There was a company I had, I was on the board of the company that failed. And
where was it located?
In Strasbourg.
Okay. Where you have another company today?
The company today in Strasbourg is a descendant of the one that failed.
Okay.
I was asked to join the board of the one that failed, more as a ceremonial thing than because of any expertise I brought to it. It's another story.
Yeah.
People pick put people on the board because they want to have a name on it.
Sure.
Or something. Okay, fine. Company failed, or couldn't raise more money. The venture capitalists behind it felt it was going a different direction. Whatever the reasons were. And so, but there was a little bit of a nugget of the technology there that I felt could be the seed of another company. So I offered to put some money back in that, and one or two other of the VCs in the old company felt comfortable in doing the same thing, uh-huh. And that's how the current company in Strasbourg was born.
Uh-huh.
I was its chairman of the board until a few weeks ago, when I resigned to make room for someone out of the pharmaceutical industry who could better lead it than I can.
I see. And that was a molecular biology company from the beginning?
It's a GPCR company,
yeah.
Identification of GPCR targets.
Uh-huh.
It now has contracts with two Japanese companies and Eli Lilly, and is in discussion with Pfizer, you know. So
yeah.
It has a tool that other pharma companies could use.
Yeah.
So I was putting my energies into that with people I had selected to work with.
Yeah. The first company failed. When did you got involved with that company prior to the merger between Selexa and Lynx?
I can't answer that. I have to look at my calendar.
Yeah. But really, it was after...
It was after Selexa, after the Selexa.
When you started to devote your time to this, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that was the first company had failed at that time, or had
no,
not?
No, it had just started.
Okay,
yeah. And I was asked to join its board. Mm-hmm.
And why did it fail?
Because it had had undertaken to go after a particular pharmaceutical target with a drug that had already been on the market, and the attempt was to repurpose that drug in the market. And it turned out that the market size and the aspect of intellectual property, because the compound was already on the market, and all that, did not offer enough assurance to a large pharmaceutical company that it's worth marketing.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so that's basically it.
Mm-hmm. So, but good idea. Could have
it
worked.
Was a good idea. Yeah. I mean, it was a good idea. And whether it could have worked or not, I'm not qualified to judge, because the pharmaceutical industry is a
risky business. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was it. Look, the reason I was asked to join its board is very simple. It was based on the work of a professor at the University of Paris in Orsay, who was my classmate in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
And the venture capitalist who was funding that work is someone whom I had met here in Berkeley many years ago when he was doing this, as a Frenchman, was doing his postdoc study in the 70s in Berkeley. And he asked me as a favor to join my former schoolmate.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, I get it.
All reasons that have nothing to do with rationality.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Many, many important things happen that way.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're doing that, and then so population genetics comes sometime later.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you're in France now. You're back in living in France.
I'm commuting.
Okay.
The reason we're all alone here, for example, is that my wife is in South Africa. Okay. She's South African origin,
And
so we spend a lot of time in South Africa, spend time in France when my work requires, spend time here when the weather is nice here, and I have
it's
to come
hot
back.
Now. It's,
Okay. Are you uncomfortable? We can move inside.
No, I'm fine, but it's very hot, unusually hot.
Yeah, but if you're uncomfortable, we can move inside.
Oh, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, when people ask me where I live, I say United Airlines.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, the reason we started this in Cambridge is because Sydney had a former student of his who he thought would be qualified to run the biochemistry. And
Who was that?
It was, what's his name again? Mental block here.
That's okay. We can look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know how it is with names. Yeah.
Yeah. That's on the tip of my tongue, but we'll come up.
Sure.
Anyway, so I met the gentleman. I liked him, and we started population genetics. With the help, financial help. Well, let's put it this way. After the Lynx Solexa thing.
Yeah, did Sydney Brenner stay involved with that?
No. Sydney said, well, we've proven that we can do 500,000 things. If that company is going to make it easy for everybody to do, our job is done anyway. So.
Yeah, okay.
Move on to something else.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, so we something else was something that Sydney, a former student of his who's active in venture capital, and I decided to explore indirectly. We hired one of Sydney's former students, housed him in some laboratory somewhere, to prove that the basic idea may work. We created a limited liability company called Compass Genetics.
Uh-huh.
And then, when we decided to create the company in Cambridge, the Wellcome Trust put in the money for the company in Cambridge, and we contributed the technology from Compass Genetics, and we called it Population Genetics. Mm-hmm. So Population Genetics licensed Compass Genetics that Sydney, Philip Gullett, and I had seeded. Uh-huh. And got started with Population Genetics, and we hired some people. The long story, Population Genetics developed a number of technologies that enable people to look at the population of genomes simultaneously. Yeah. Instead of having to sequence every genome in a population, you can put all the DNA together and obtain sequencing information in one sample from that population without having to lose the identity of which genome came from whom.
Yeah, that's a pretty good trick.
Yeah, and now that trick has been licensed to two companies. I think it's public information, though.
Sure.
We'll double check before we publish it. But it's New England Biolabs and Agilent.
Uh-huh.
And there's a third technology that remains in Population Genetics, which we're now trying to finance. It's a diagnostic target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's the history of that.
Right.
So while working on this, and because of the awareness that I had of the importance of sample preparation and sequencing, decided to go ahead and start that robotic company, mm-hmm. which I did with a group of scientists and engineers of another company that failed, on whose board I was.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And where and that?
That was SpinX.
And that's here?
Or,
no, this is in Strasbourg.
That's in Geneva.
Geneva, okay.
That's
I'm getting confused. You got lots going on in different places.
Yeah.
Well, so you've had a lot of experience doing business in different places, in Europe, in England, in the United States. You know, what are your opinions or what have you observed about the differences?
I've observed that there's about the same proportion of smart people everywhere.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
However, the constraints imposed by society on the manner in which, on how free people think they are, affects very much how the work is done.
Yeah.
And
so it's safe to say there's more freedom here, or perception of more freedom here.
I don't know how best to describe that. But
yeah.
I'll give you a couple of anecdotes.
Okay.
Before Applied Biosystems, when I was at Hewlett Packard at the time, and because I had been hired in a context where there was some remote involvement from Bill Hewlett himself, I'd written to his office a letter asking why the personnel office had rejected my application, which I thought they should have applied.
Uh-huh.
Arrogance here.
Yeah.
And his secretary had returned back and said, Mr. Hewlett would like you to meet with so-and-so, so I met so-and-so and got a job there. And all that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I, eight, nine years later, when I left Hewlett Packard to start Applied Bio, I felt I should go and explain why or apologize why, whatever.
Yeah.
So I asked permission to see Mr. Hewlett. And he looked at me and he said, well, what have you got to lose? The worst that can happen, you come back here.
Yeah, that's very nice, yeah. That's good, yeah.
That's an observation that no European manager will make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So,
And it's a little bit harder. to do things.
It's harder. I mean, I went to France. I went back to France for a postdoc after I got my PhD there. And I got my PhD doing spectroscopy,
yeah,
magnetic resonance, things like that. And when I got to France, I got interested in trying to do that kind of spectroscopy on biological systems, on cell membranes, for example.
Uh-huh.
And the boss of the lab said, "Hey, you're a physicist. Leave the biology to biologists."
And so it's a little bit more open here. You have for doing cross-disciplinary, transdisciplinary work, that kind of...
It's particularly true in California. I don't know how it is in the rest of the United States.
Yeah. Well, there are other places, certainly in Boston, Cambridge, and same kind of environment, I think, but yeah. Where do you see the population genetics has these technologies now? One is with Agilent, one's with New England Biolabs, and if DNA sequencing makes it to the clinic, becomes affordable, then these technologies will really take off.
No. These technologies. I can't answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But the.
On the one hand, you can sequence an individual genome.
So what?
Well, that's it. So you have now, if you can do this, you can learn a lot about what's the relationship between this individual genome and a larger population. Yeah. That's worth knowing. Yeah.
What you asked before, I'm not gonna try to. I think it's a question that's worth asking the several experts that you have access to,
mm-hmm,
that I don't have access to anymore. How important to all the possible diseases or biological disorders is just the human genome?
Very few. Maybe, you know, when you have a single gene mutation that causes some condition, but even, you know, there are a few of those, right, they've identified.
So sequencing the human genome individually is not going to give you very much information.
No, that's right.
So, yeah. You've answered the question.
Yeah, but you have a technology where you can look at patterns that are...
Yeah, but of those patterns that I'm going to find differences, how many of those differences are due to differences in the human genome?
Or environment, or yeah.
Or are due to infections of the organism by other genomes?
Well, you can identify that, right?
Yeah, but you still do not know which of that is associated with what. No.
It's very complicated.
It's very complicated. It's a set of onion you're going to keep eating. Okay, so, and I do not know enough about where things stand to comment on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The things that we're focusing on right now. Population genetics right now. One of the technologies that we've developed will enable you. Well, let me back off. Most assays, diagnostic assays, have to use PCR to get enough material to sequence, right?
Yeah.
But PCR makes errors.
Yeah.
And when you sequence, sample. We do not know which of these errors are due to the PCR process and which are mutations that were existed before you PCR'd. Mm-hmm. Population genetics technology enables you, when you find a suspected mutation, it tells you whether it comes from PCR product or whether it comes from the original molecule before it was PCR.
How does it distinguish?
That's the trick.
Okay.
It distinguished that because we are able to tag the original DNA before it's PCR.
How are you tagging it?
With DNA. And in a clever way that is not affected by the PCR, so that in the product that come later, if there's anywhere on a molecule, on any fragment anywhere, there's a suspected mutation, I can go and look, does it have
the
an original tag or is it copy?
Uh-huh. Okay. Good.
If it's a copy, I'm suspicious, I'll put it aside. If it's the original tag, I know exactly that it is.
Okay. And this is the technology that population genetics still holds?
This is the one that it still holds.
Yeah. And
for certain diseases, it's been licensed for others.
I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We're holding back for infectious diseases.
Why did you select infectious disease?
I had to select something. We had to sell something to get money to invest in something else. So
yeah. Well, why infectious disease rather than cancer? Which, I mean, it actually might be related, but yeah.
We just picked infectious disease because right now there's a very strong market for HIV and HCV.
Yeah.
Which suffer from the problem of knowing whether the mutations you're seeing are induced by PCR or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the technologies that you license to New England Biolabs and to Agilent, those have to do with the
I don't know the details.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can. Is Sydney Brenner still involved in the company?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
he's a shareholder and he's an advisor. And
He's
not on the board. He never was.
Yeah. So you see him occasionally?
Not as often as his health
he's,
is. His
yeah,
health,
he's
his
health in is, late 80s by now. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And his health is failing. And,
yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, how active are you in this? Is it still full-time engagement with these enterprises for you personally?
Well, it's hard to do anything part-time, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing part of my time in,
sure.
in each one, but I'm in the process of considering another one too. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh?
Very good. Yeah. You mentioned before that you were working on some kind of memoir or some kind of biographical account. Is that?
Yeah, I'm still working on it when I find the time.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, when you have some of that together, we'll be happy to read it for you to help you with that. And we hope that when we write up our stuff, we're working on the history of commercial biotechnology going back to the late 70s, early 80s.
Get some more juice.
I'm fine, thanks.
You're fine.
Yeah. And applied biosystems will be a big part of that. So we'll write that up and I will send you that part for your critical review. That would be good. And we'll also give it to Andre.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Andre was the first person I involved with applied biosystems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've been able to talk to a number of people from Applied Biosystems and haven't been able to get to Mike Hunkapiller.
Well, I think Mike has. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's.
I think he's naturally reserved. And
he's naturally reserved, and also
he's busy.
He has not gotten over yet in spite of all of his achievements, he hasn't gotten over the fact that he was once a student of Leo Herbert.
Uh-huh. He feels like there's competition there?
No competition, he feels that...
He's still in the shadow somehow.
He's still in the shadows, even though it was he who did much of the... It's a very hard issue to define the borderline between where credit is due and where credit is shared and where.
Yes.
You know how difficult that is.
Yes. Well, we just did a story on Leroy Hood. Be happy to do one on Mike Hunkapiller. Haven't been able to reach him yet. We'll keep trying.
Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't. I mean,
he's an important part of the history. Yeah. He's done a lot of important things. So.
Well, I think another person, I don't know if he may have retired now. It's hard for me to keep track of the ages of people. Former student of Leroy Hood, who was a professor at the University of Wisconsin.
Smith?
Yeah,
Lloyd
Smith.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him?
No, we do have an oral history with him that was done at the Smithsonian. I haven't talked to him personally, but yeah, that would be good to...
Well, he was at the origin of the DNA sequence.
Yeah,
it wasn't Mike.
Okay. Right, yeah.
So, the initial work, I don't know who got in the patents, but the initial work of the fluorescent detection with one tag was Lloyd. And
he had the laser, he did the laser detection? Or?
No, he's the first one who showed that one could do a gel electrophoresis with, instead of a radioactive compound, fluorescent compound, but you couldn't go beyond that because putting four different colors would turn out to be very difficult to do. That was done at Applied. It was not done at Caltech.
Yeah.
But the Lloyd was at the origin of it, and it was the chemists that I hired at Applied later that pursued that work.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd could probably give you a good perspective on that if you're interested.
I'll try to reach him. We've talked to some others. I didn't personally, but one of our folks talked to Bill Efkovich.
Yeah.
He was involved in those machines.
He was involved in the DNA synthesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill is back in California now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're trying to get multiple perspectives on everything.
Okay.
Anything else we should add, Sam?
You tell me. I mean,
if we have any questions,
I think there's one thing that I felt very uncomfortable after that, volunteering for that video thing at the last meeting, because I ended up hesitating a lot, and I don't know how much of that you're using or not using.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Do you want to do it again sometime?
Well, I would like to see it at least, or see a transcript or something.
Yeah.
The main message that I wanted to give, I thought about it, with the context of questions, I don't remember all the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
The main message that I wanted to give was the following. From my perspective, in terms of my involvement in the creation of Applied Biosystems, chances are, if Bill Bowes hadn't spent as much time with me as he did, I probably wouldn't have left Hewlett Packard. Okay.
That's good to know.
That's one point that I was trying to make, but the questions I was being asked, well, did Bill Bowes understand where biotechnology was going to go. I can't answer that, and I don't want to even try answering that, because chances are the answer is no. But the fact is that the point I was trying to make is that in today's VC world, people like me would never start a company.
Because of the way it's changed.
Because the way it's changed is someone with an MBA comes with a series of questions to ask you, and if you hesitate about one of these things, he will not sense that maybe you have the capacity to do it when you're scared. Like Bill did with me. And so did Moshe Alafi. And that was the number of breakfasts I had in Moshe's yard like this many years ago before I decided to really throw myself into applied was just, I can't imagine that happening with any of the VCs that I see today. That's probably worth an article by itself sometime.
I think it is. It's good to hear that. I will tell Donna that you're interested in reviewing that tape, and certainly anytime you want. I mean, we're going to be holding these events.
Okay.
You know, we'll have the annual dinners. You can.
I'm leaving next Wednesday, but I'll be back 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
For about 2 or 3 weeks again. So.
Okay. Sure. I'll let Donna know. And very good.
Okay.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate the time. Can I help you clear that?
Somebody's coming up with the clean.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, good. I think you have, you have some time to prepare for your next.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll be here till 11.
Okay, so we'll add this to the other transcript, and I think we have a pretty full account.